Hey guys, how's it going? My name is Joseph Fordham and this is NPLH In Conversation With, the football podcast that isn't about football, brought to you by NPLH Studio. NPLH is more than a podcast. Once you've hit the follow button, visit nplhmag.com to enjoy online reads, subscribe to our newsletter and browse our collection of magazines, prints and apparel. On to the show. Hello, I'm Joe Fordham and you're listening to NPLH. I'm speaking with photographer Maximilian Hetherington. Max talks through his career stages, starting with his first camera, a gift from his grandfather, right up to a recent shoot with a leading Premier League club, how he got there, how he approaches his craft, and how a teenage setback fuels the hunger to succeed in his second calling. This is a conversation in its purest form, full of tangents, vulnerability, and insights into the life and motivations of a leading creative. Before we start, a quick reminder that NPLH is more than a podcast. Visit nplhmag.com where you can enjoy online reads, subscribe to our weekly newsletter, and browse our ever-growing collection of magazines, prints, and apparel. NPLH is an independent, ad-free platform and your support, in whatever form, keeps us playing. Enjoy the episode.
Hello.
Yes, mate. How you doing?
I'm good, bruv. How are you?
Yeah, very good.
Good, man. Good.
Mate, that's an accent that sounds remarkably like mine.
What's yours?
So I grew up in Dagenham.
Oh, fucking hell. No, nowhere near that, mate. I'm originally from Portsmouth.
Are you really?
Yeah.
You do really good impressions.
I think growing up here, I mean, there's a real... I think because it's a naval town and it's a port, isn't it? So like, I think back in the day, there's a real crossover of Cockney. The accent here is like half Cockney, half farmer. It's really, really weird, man. And then obviously living in London, I've lived in like East London for like 15 years. So I've got a really strange mix up. Sometimes when I'm at parties at like 2 a.m, people are like, are you Australian? And I'm like, no, why? Like, yeah, my accent's weird. I think it changes. It changes, like, depending on who I'm with as well. So I'll probably, like, because you've got that accent, I'm probably just going to mimic yours now this whole chat.
Yeah, mate, I get the same. If I'm around someone that I perceive to be more middle class or something like that.
You put on the posh one, do you?
My edges get a little bit softer and I just sound stupid.
It's funny.
My H's and T's still don't come out.
No, I'm the same, man. I'm the same. And I think a lot of the time that sort of, if you've got a bit of a working class accent, I think it can go one of two ways, can't it? Some people think, oh, right, he's a normal guy. Like, yeah, cool. And you've got a trust thing there straight away. Other people are like, oh, who's this commoner? Who's this like cocky little shit? But it definitely, I think if you're smart enough, you can use it. You know, you can use it to your advantage in most situations, but you're definitely right, man. I've been at places, you know, friends' house or parties or whatever, and I'm like, hello, how are you? How are we? You know, like putting on the posh one.
It's definitely something I got more confident with as I've got older.
Yeah.
Where, like, I'd meet more people in my 20s, maybe.
And yeah.
Like, people that were from, like, in inverted commas, nicer backgrounds.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And yeah, I'm with you.
Maybe feeling like you just did, you know, I guess just a lack of confidence there. But as you get older, you kind of wear it as a bit of a badge of honour and you...
You know what? We are what we are, aren't we? And I think there's not enough of that. You know, I say this all the time, man. I swear like a trooper. I'm an idiot most of the time. But if you're just you, if you're unapologetically you, that's up to everyone else to make their mind up on whether they're going to roll with you or not, you know, whether they like you. And I think, especially in this day and age, mate, with socials and all this stuff, you know, we're bombarded by everything and how we should dress, how we should look, what we should look, you know, hair, teeth, you know, everything. Just be you. Like, I know that, like, I'm a vain git most of the time, and I do spend half an hour in the bathroom in the morning, like, you know. Even though you can't tell with this long beard at the moment, but you know, like, I do look after myself, but at the same time, I also put on whatever I want clothing wise and don't care what anyone thinks, talk however I want in any situation. And like, it's up to everyone else then, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
You know,
it brings a bit of peace when you land at that at that point, right, where you like what it is?
It's age, man. 100%. Like, I'm 30. How old am I? 35? 36 in December. I don't feel like I'm old, but I don't feel like I'm like a little whippersnapper anymore, 20 or whatever.
You're getting 1 year extensions now. You're not getting any more of the 2-3 year deals.
Exactly. I'm getting rid of myself on Football Manager because I'm not a wonder kid anymore. You know what I mean? Remember we used to do that? Anyone approaching 29, 30, ding them off. I remember selling like half of that Man United squad back in the day, like, you know, when they all started getting. I had Beckham till he was 30, and I got rid of him at 30. Even he's my favourite player, but it broke my heart. But it was my parameter to get rid of people at 30.
Business is business, right?
Business is business on Football Manager, man. What are you going to do? I can't remember what I was saying, though.
Yeah, sorry, mate. I cut you off there.
Age, it's that thing. You know what? I've always been confident. You know, I played a lot of football when I was younger, and you know, like you're saying, from a working class background, you know, it's sink or swim, isn't it? You either got to stand up for yourself and make shit happen, or you ain't getting by. That's a fact. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying I was a terror as a kid, but I was good at sport, and that, you know, bless my poor mum as a single parent. She used to drive me here, there, and everywhere. You know, she dedicated her whole, you know, her whole time to taking me to these places. But what I'm trying to get at is I learned so much. You know, I didn't have a father figure growing up, so I had to figure it out, you know. And that, I think that's, you know, we're going to talk about football a lot in this convo, and I think that's where football comes in, you know, provides role models always. But I learned a lot about how to handle myself in many ways, you know, and being good at a sport, then, you know, you learn those vital communication skills, those building blocks of teamwork, all, you know, all the shit that everyone knows. And I think, like I'm saying, like growing up, I was pretty confident, but there's still, you know, you get into your teenage years and, you know, it all goes weird, doesn't it? You know, it's a way away now, teenage years, but I just remember not being, I don't know, like it's just a weird time, isn't it, for anyone?
Yeah, mate, nothing fit me. I look terrible in everything.
Dude,
I put on.
I'm tall, I'm 6'3", and I'm tall and skinny, and I don't know what happened, but yeah, everything was weird, and like, you know, just your feet are bigger than your legs, and then, you know, it's all strange, isn't it? But anyway, yeah, getting older, I think I didn't even really find myself, I don't think, until pushing 30, really. And like, I don't think, you know, I don't think you ever really find yourself. I think that's probably, you know, what we're all looking for, isn't it? Learning who we truly are. But I don't think that I was anywhere near being like me until I was at least 29, 30. Like, it's mad. And going back to what we started to talk about, that confidence thing, with age, you know, and we're talking like we're 2 6-year-old men here, but with age, you get to that point and you're like, you know what? I'm cool with this, you know. I've been through stuff, ups and downs, you know, highs and lows. And there's plenty more to come, but I feel pretty cool with where I'm at. And I actually, you know, friends have come and gone and partners or whatever. And you're like, you know what? I know what I like. I know how to be a good person. And I'm pretty cool just, you know, finding my flow here. And you just don't care what anyone thinks, do you? You get to that point and you're like, don't worry, it doesn't bother me, you know?
Yeah, mate, you've nailed it there. I think a lot of those downs that you kind of get through, they like help with the confidence that comes with the age.
100%, mate, 100%.
You've got like you've got the wins logged. You're like, oh, well, I know I got back from that.
Yeah. I can do it again.
And the bigger those dips are, the more confident you get.
And it goes back to what we were saying, what I touched on before about socials, you know, where, can I swear on this?
Yeah.
Well, we live on the BBC. I fucking hate socials, man. I hate social media. And, it's such a huge part of our life, but it's instilled in so many of us a way to be, you know. You have to look like this, you know. Girls have to aspire to be this. Boys have to do this. And it's killing. I just think it's killing everything. I mean, it's good in so many ways. Don't get me wrong. Social media has changed everything. And it's amazing. And I probably wouldn't have a job without it, to be fair. But intrinsically and as who we are as people, I think it's hard, you know. It's really, really, really hard. And it's, I don't know. I hope that, I don't know. I hope that there's a way that, I don't know. I'm talking about having kids recently. I haven't got any kids, but just thinking about how the pressures on that generation below me and then kids that I might have in the next few years or whatever with my girlfriend or whatever. And how, you know, again, this is welcome to my world, man. This is where my brain goes. But like, we watched a Rooney documentary after the England game the other day. And he's talking about his kids and he's, you know, the reason Wayne Rooney was who he was is because, you know, probably like me and you, you come home from school and you get whatever blooming tango football you had, what your mate had with all the rubber, you know, all the leather missing, you'd kick it as far as you could. You'd walk from school kicking it. You'd go down the park. You wouldn't go home. You wouldn't eat. You'd be getting your school uniform dirty. You might go home and get changed. You might not, but you'd be out from 2:30 until dusk, until dark, right? And that was how we grew up. And in this Rooney documentary, I just remember him talking about his own kids. And he's like, they don't do that. Kids don't do that anymore. They come home and, you know, they've got good lives. And I mean, it's Wayne Rooney. He's got loads of money. But, you know, they've got good lives. And they run their screens and they play their computer games. And, of course, we played computer games when we were younger. But social media, and it just wasn't the same. We'd go out and play. And it just got me thinking about, like, those early life lessons that you learn not only in school but like out and about with your mates. You know, you might get into trouble, you might start drinking at 13 or whatever, but I know for me, because I was so heavily involved with football, I didn't get into any of that at an early age. You know, I was like, what do you mean you want me to smoke a cigarette at 13? I'm playing football, I've got a game at the weekend, you know. So I had that skill set from an early age, and I don't know if that happens anymore. It must do. It must do. I don't know.
Probably on a much smaller scale, yeah. Like, I mean, I guess, well, there is less going on out and about that you see.
Yeah. Just that sort of street savvy.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, there was maybe 3 kids at the end of the road, and I had to turn the corner. And a little bit of me was like, fuck's sake, like, get out of the road. but then I thought, hey, when did I last see kids mucking around in the road?
Exactly.
Felt like saying sorry, but I said sorry. I mean,
sorry to yourself for being angry at them.
Yeah,
no, you are getting old, mate. You are getting old.
I suppose 15 minutes in, we should mention that you're.
Is that 15 minutes? Wow, man, time flies. How long have we got? Let's do this for 3 hours.
We should mention that you're a pretty successful photographer.
I guess you don't get to that level
maybe without that quality that you're just talking about. Is that something that you're aware has carried you through?
Yeah, and I appreciate you saying that, mate. It's always hard to take a compliment, isn't it? And my girlfriend will always be moaning at me for not being able to take a compliment, so thank you, I guess. I'm doing all right, you know. I'm doing all right. I think... In answer to your question, yes, because I'm hungry and I've got a fire that I guess comes from upbringing and childhood and things like that. So having come into this sort of game, not at disadvantage, but I'm self-taught, I'm not from any sort of money and blah, blah, blah. And that's not a pity me sort of or anything, because it's half the population. But like, I've come in with a hunger of like, I want to prove myself here, you know, and I know I've got something here, but I've probably got to work a little bit harder to show you guys that I'm worthy. Or do you know what I mean? I don't know the best way to say that, but.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I wonder how much of that is just in our head as well.
Most of it works. Most of whatever we think in our head is complete bullshit, isn't it? We know that. It's all ego and all, you know. But yeah, I'm doing all right, man. I'm very aware that I'm very lucky. Very lucky to be in the position that I'm in, and how, you know, how far I've come in a short space of time. You know, I've only really been shooting, say, 10 years, which, you know, it's a decent whack, it's a decent time, but I came into that sort of photography world quite late. It started as a hobby, really, you know, from a very early age of, you know, picking up your granddad's SLR and all that sort of stuff that, you know, most photographers will say that, you know, they came into that world of, like, you know, getting a disposable camera developed and being like, whoa, mind blown, or their granddad gave them an SLR like mine did, or things like that. But yeah, I kind of got into it late, and I'm hungry to do more, you know. I'm really hungry to do more, but it's not an easy game, you know. It's really not. And it's like anything in the world, there's always someone younger, someone better, someone doing things that you wish you were doing. And but I think that's the magic of it, really. We live in a world full of creativity, and I'm constantly inspired, sometimes more than others. You know, I'm the first to admit I'm a lazy bugger, and I do get into my head sometimes. You know, if something hasn't gone my way, or the weather's shit, or whatever, I'll be the first one to switch the PlayStation on and play a season on career mode and waste 2 days. You know what I mean? But
this will solve it. This will solve the problem. That'll be sorted by the time I log off.
Yeah, and it won't, you know. And I'm old enough to know that by now, but I still do those stupid things, as we all do. But yeah, things are going well, man. Things are going well. But I'm hungry and I want to be doing more, you know. I guess that's a good thing.
Right, so we're talking today on the, so it's the 22nd of November.
It is.
60th anniversary of JFK's assassination, FYI.
Interesting you say that, because I watched a program on Lee Harvey Oswald last night. And I'm like, why is this on the TV? A bit weird. You know, like, it's, there's so many conspiracies or whatever, and I'm into all that stuff, and I love digging and I love finding things out, whether it's complete codswallop or not. But I'm there thinking, it's a bit of a weird thing to have on BBC. Like, what's going on? But thanks for telling me that, because
there we go. Here we close are. That circle for you. So yesterday, or day before, I forget now, you're on a pretty big shoot with a pretty big club. And you've mentioned that you got your first camera off of your granddad. Well, it's his camera. So what? How do you get from your granddad's SLR to shooting with Chelsea? And all of the, you know, obviously you've got a bigger body of work than that have got some huge clients that also spans fashion as well as football, and it merges the two as well. So it's a pretty monumental jump. What did it look like in the early days?
Good question, my friend. It is a good question, but it's like also that thing of like, how long have we got? Because I can talk for England, man.
Welcome to part one of MPLH with Maximilian Hetherington.
Part one of 17. Tune in next week. maybe this can be a regular thing, man. I'm down with it. I quite like this. It's nice. I'm enjoying it. How did I get from there to there? So I think my love of photography started, I mean, I'm oldish. And like, you know, back when we were growing up, you'd get a film from Boots and stick it in the camera and point it, and just take it. You didn't really know what you're doing. Well, I didn't know what I was doing. I just never forget going to Boots or wherever it was with my mum or my granddad, and paying that £5 to get that little roll of whatever it was developed. There's a magic there, you know, it's a science, obviously, but that is pure magic. It's like vinyl records. It's like anything analog is it's alchemy, isn't it? And I've always been obsessed with, you know, out there things, you know, not your usual shit, the moon, the stars, whatever. And I don't know half of any of it, but I've always been intrigued by things that have a magic to them. You know, it could be Totti on the pitch or someone like, you know, there's just, I love that pizzazz, right? Anyway, that's how I get into photography, and I've always sort of done it. And then I think, having no money as a kid or as a teenager, I always used to go in charity shops, always. I know half the clothes I still wear now are from charity shops. I'm not even afraid to admit it, because I love them. I think there's something magic there about that. What I started doing was realizing that you could pick up old cameras in charity shops. And you can still do it now to an extent, but people have got wise, you know. But you could go into a Bernardo's or whatever and find an old Olympus for fiver. And if you know what you're on about, open it up, click the shutter, check it works, and you think, fucking hell, I've got a £150 camera here for £5, and there's like that little bit of, oh, I've won. So then you put another roll of film in that, and I think that was where the bug started for me. I'd just have like a little wheel and deal in the charity shops and get like a new point and shoot, and then come home and Google it or whatever, or ask someone about it. And then one of my very first girlfriends was actually down in Portsmouth at uni here. And she was studying illustration. Jade, her name was, super cool. We were together a long time. But when she finished uni here, she was like, I can't stay in Portsmouth. Like, I've got to go, but I'm going home. She was from Enfield, which is North London. So as a sort of a late teenager, I'm thinking, oh man, you know, we've been together a while now. Like, and I'm thinking maybe this is my opportunity to go to London, you know, as a teenager from a smaller town, you know, London seems big and scary. And, you know, we've all been in and out of London, I'm sure. And I know a lot of people that have moved and moved there young or moved there when they were 30 or whatever. But I just remember thinking, oh, my God, I don't know. I know that there's more to life. You know, I need to probably go to London at some point. But when she said that she was going back to London, I'm thinking, cool. So I went back with her. We sort of got going and we moved into our own flat. And long story short, we got a friend group that some of them were models and some of them were in bands. And, you know, she was actually in a band at one point. So I'd just be like, oh, I'll do some press pictures for you, you know, and half of them were terrible. But, you know, probably if I was to look at them now, I'd just be like, oh, my God, what was I doing? But it was a way in, you know, it was a learning curve. And so I did that for a while. And then one of my first jobs when I was young was when I first moved to London was at a photo booth company, believe it or not. You know, when you go to a wedding or whatever and they have the little pop-up photo booths, you go in and you're pissed up and you take a picture and you've got all those props and stuff. And I just remember thinking, I need a job, you know, I'm skinner with no money. I'm living in London, 20, whatever. What am I going to do? Applied for a million jobs. And this one was probably one of the only ones that got back to me. And I went, yeah, come in for a chat. And I went in and they were like, what do you know about photography? And I was like, nothing really. Like, I've got a film camera. And they were like, all right, fair enough. Like, we're going to have to teach this boy some stuff. And, you know, it's a simple process. They have a very sort of basic DSLR and it goes into a laptop through Photoshop and there's a script and all these things around the back of that photo booth for then the customer to take that shot. So I got the job and they only employed at that company photography assistants or photographers or video makers or people sort of in that world who most of them just did it at the weekends. You know, I think we got paid 150 quid a job or something, you know, and for me that was great because I could do three or four of them a week and be like, oh cool. And you'd have to go and load it into the van, set it up, work the event. So that was really my first introduction into like a professional sort of business world of photography. And after a few years there, I got bored. Well, I got bored pretty easily. I got bored quite quickly and I started messing around and being late and all that sort of shit that you do when you're younger. And I remember the manager there at the time, a girl called Gemma. I still speak to Gem now. And she was like, Max, what do you want to do with your, where are you going? Like, what's the purpose here? And I've never been that goal person. Like, I find it really hard. I just tend to go with the flow, which sometimes is good, sometimes is bad. And she said, look, my husband's a pretty successful commercial photographer. If you want, like, I think you should probably get out of here and have a chat with him. You know, he might be able to employ you as an assistant or whatever, but have a chat. I think you'll get on. You know, give him a call. Anyway, rung him up. And long story short, he was like, yeah, cool, man. Like, I can have you come and assist. Like, what do you know? And I probably exaggerated what I knew at the time. You know, probably said I knew a bit more than I did technically. Anyway, like a week later, he's like, Max, I'm shooting Kendrick Lamar for NME magazine. Can you come and assist? And I'm like, Kendrick Lamar, oh my God, like this is massive. What the hell? And that was where it started. And from that, I assisted him for probably a year or two, you know. And we shot musicians like Kendrick Lamar. I think we did Harry Styles. But then he did a lot of sports stuff as well. And we shot Gareth Bale when Gareth Bale was at Madrid and a few others, you know, and I'm just thinking, wow, I wouldn't mind being there as well. And I learned a lot from Sham technically, because I'm not a technical photographer really. I'd like to be a bit more, but I'm really not. I'm more about having a chat and getting someone on board and doing my thing with them. And without sounding too corny, like the photography part of it comes, but I'd rather just be there, you know, having a chat and then take the shot and then have a bit more of a chat. So I learned a lot of that from Sham lighting wise and how to be a personality, because he's a personality. And then after a while, I just said to him, look, man, I'm really grateful, but I think I need to try and do this on my own. And it was probably way too soon. And I thought I was bigger than I was and blah, blah, blah. And I said, look, I'm going to start doing my own work, my own jobs. And man, I did shit jobs for so long. I did shit jobs like, you know, 100 quid jobs and just saying yes to everything and struggled, you know. I'm like, this isn't what I signed up for. Like, I want to be doing like huge fashion shoots and footballers. Why am I doing this? Why am I working with this idiot who doesn't understand anything and paying me no money? Like, and it was a battle, man. It was a real battle. And I ate beans on toast for a long time, you know, because I just wasn't doing it. it wasn't happening. Something wasn't clicking. And it was probably a mix of me over-egging my pudding in terms of my ability a little bit, me not having the required experience and ability, but I had the fight, I had the balls, and I had the just, you know what, I'm going to do this. And jobs started coming, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, that's cool. Do you think they meant to email me? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's always that sort of imposter syndrome that never really goes away.
Yeah, it's interesting that, because despite the fact that the body of work you've got building up, you're still carrying a bit of that, are you?
Oh, man, 100%. Like, I'm a confident dude, and I say this kind of tongue-in-cheek, but there always is that moment, you know. I step onto set with these huge footballers, and I'm like, oh, my God, like, I was playing with you on FIFA the other night. This is mad. Do you know what I mean? And there's part of me that I'm a big kid, you know. I'm 35, but I'm a big kid, and I think that's a good skill to have, you know, to be excited by things and to not be too serious and grown up about shit a lot of the time. I think we've lost that as adults, you know, that ability to be, whoa. And it's the same with my work, you know. I'm very aware that work is work, you know, and you can lose that, you know. Once your passion becomes your work, it's hard to keep it fun and to keep it interesting. But I'd like to, I have that voice in my head, and I'm like, dude, you're the luckiest motherfucker in the planet right now. You're just about to step onto set with so-and-so, or you're just about to walk into this ground and do this. Like, or, you know, so I still have those moments where I'm like, oh, man, this is a real, like, what the hell? Like, I had them in the summer. Like, I've been doing a lot of work with Soccer Bible lately. I reached out to Pete a few years ago, just out of the blue. And I remember seeing a picture at a really old, probably, I don't know, years and years ago, of Juan Mata when he was at United, black and white, and Mata's in like a suit or something. And I'm like, wow, that's football and fashion. How cool is that? I want to be doing that. And I finally messaged Pete a few years ago, just on Instagram. I said, look, and I know you've had him on here, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was a great conversation there.
Yeah, man, I love Pete to death. Like, you know, we've had some great experiences. But I messaged him out of the blue and just said, look, man, like, I love what you guys are doing. Here's my work. I'm not really doing any football stuff at the moment, but I love football. I'm a huge football fan. You know, I played a lot when I was a kid, and, you know, if there's anything comes up, just let me know. And he was like, cool, what are you doing next weekend? Like, United are playing Leeds in the first game of the season. Do you want to go and take some pictures of it? And I'm like, I'm the biggest United fan in the world. And I'm like, you messing? He's like, nah, there you go. And I was like, okay, cool. And that was that, man. Like, and since that, like, I've done quite a few jobs with them, and with Pete specifically, and also Keane. And I love them both. Like, we're all very similar in a lot of ways, but we're all sort of our own individual people as well. And like, Pete's an amazing creative man. Like, not only his mindset and the way that he's cool and calm, and his vision, the creative vision that I have to work towards for lots of our shoots, you know, I'm just like, wow, this is sick. And it's a brilliant dynamic there. But also the way he shoots, you know, he's a great photographer. And Keane the same, man. Keane's an amazing director. Like a little band of little mini rock stars, like little kind of... And I think that works, you know, in a way. Like, football can be quite like a sterile environment, you know. There's a lot of pressure, there's a lot of money on these very young men who you know, have been guided and shaped a certain way. And you've got to be quite, I think a lot of people in that world are quite protective, and rightly so, you know. There's, like I said, there's a lot at stake. But then since working with Pete and Keane and Soccer Bible, like, we roll in and we're wearing whatever we want. And I think people will go like, whoa, who are these boys dressed in like head to toe pink tracksuits, or like me in like ripped up jeans and mad, you know, like, I think that it's quite a refreshing way to be, and there's a lot more of it creeping into not only football, but a lot of things now.
Yeah, I guess it's a reminder that the game is a creative outlet, right? It's not necessarily all business.
It is a creative game, and I think there's a real beauty at the moment, you know, like, you know, and I think going back to Beckham, and it's always talked about the way that Beckham did his thing, and, you know, the elegance that he had in not only being an amazing footballer, but the way that he was like, good-looking geezer, and he, you know, he was a model at the same time. And even though back then it was vilified, wasn't it? You know, you had your Karens and your Garys being like, he needs to concentrate on his football. Get that, yeah. But if you're training hard and you're playing hard, like, you're still you're still a human being. And I think that that has taken a long time to kind of become a bit more acceptable. And if you look now, you know, you look at a lot of the players, you know, they're through publications like Soccer Bible and through a lot of the brands as well, you know, they are encouraged to be way more flamboyant and way more themselves, which I think is just amazing, man, because the world's changing, you know, for better or for worse. And I think football needs to change as well. Like, and it's only in the last sort of however many years that players, I feel, are starting to express themselves a lot more. You know, remember like back then when you had to wear black boots, you know, the skill player on the team might be allowed to wear a white boot, but, you know.
Mate, I don't know if you remember these. I'm 5 years older than you, but I got a pair of gold Cronus boots. I'd seen, I forget the guy, he used to play for Celtic and he had white and green pair.
Maybe.
I went into the sports shop with my dad before a new season. Sorry to cut you off. And I'd been on the Puma Kings before then. My dad got me into Puma Kings.
Yeah.
Saw these gold Cronus.
Cronus.
And I was like, I want them. And he was like, you sure?
Oh, really? Yeah. You're going to get kicked up in the air for wearing them, mate.
I wasn't good enough to wear those gold boots, mate. And I got kicked to bits.
Did you get rid of them?
6 months later, I was back on the Puma King.
oh, man, that's a shame. But I get it. I was always a Predator kid, partly because of Zidane and Beckham. Well, look, 100% because of Zidane and Beckham. But I remember when they first brought out, you remember those fluorescent yellows? I think they were like the second or third Pred. And I was good. Like, I was a good player when I was a kid. Like, really, I was at Pompey. Like, I was good level. But I wore them for the first time. And I took one sloppy touch out of my feet and bang, I was like, fuck, up in the air. Got up and I'm like, and I remember the geezer saying it was something along the lines of, that's for them stupid fucking boots, mate. Just, and I'm like, oh my God. And it's the same thing. And it's like, oh my God, I'm getting targeted for wearing like fluorescent yellow boots there. Like, wow. But, you know, coming forward, like these days, you know, that ain't the thing. And I think that's only for the best, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. If people can express themselves, you're only going to see the better of them.
Well, it doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't matter. You know, like, I don't care what you're wearing. I don't care what your hair looks like. If I like you as a person, we're mates. And I think that's where a lot of the world's problems are right now, right? Doesn't matter what boots you're wearing. Doesn't matter who you kiss in. Doesn't matter what you're doing. Like, if you're a nice person and we can respect each other, then... And it applies to football as well. And I think, you know, I mean, it's probably not that nice in grassroots level still, you know, your Sunday leagues or whatever, you're still going to get pissed up players from a Saturday night kicking people up in the air and punching refs and stuff. And that will never go away. And that's part of the beautiful game as well. But it is nicer to see now that, like, even the top level players are doing their thing a little bit more.
Like, going back quickly to those first few years where you're eating beans on toast.
I can't believe I said that, man.
It took me back to some lean days when I was travelling and brown sauce sandwiches were getting me through to a quarter coming.
Wow, man.
Long time ago, though.
Well, that's 21. Well, that's it, man. I probably wasn't much older than that doing beans on toast.
What was it in those 5 years? Was it purely like that you had that kind of drive and competitiveness that you could do it, or was it that you felt like you were doing something that you should be doing? You were aligned with it and it was worth pursuing, just regardless of your competitive streak?
I think it's probably a bit of both. I think for me, and going back to like my early years, like playing football, like I'm saying, I was at a good level, but I didn't make it, you know, as thousands of other kids don't make it. And you know, you hear stories of that all the time, right? But I was at Portsmouth until I was like just before professional level, and I didn't get that professional contract. And I'm not going to lie, it broke my heart. It absolutely destroyed me for a long time. And when you're, I mean, it's talked about a lot more these days, isn't it? The mental health side of things, especially in football, and, you know, teaching these young men and women now how to adapt their lives away from the game, how to focus on other things in case, God forbid, that they don't get that professional deal. But when I didn't make it at that age, I was it's all I knew. It's all I did from the age of 5, 6, 7, you know, like that's 10 years of your life that you're playing football 5 times a week. I didn't know anything else. And I don't, even though I say now it broke my heart, I don't think I realized at the time how much it affected me as a young man, that disappointment, you know. And I was good enough as well, and there's lots of other things that come into play, but I didn't make it. And it was probably down to probably not really being focused enough and trying hard enough, because I had that natural talent. I was probably not putting enough in because I knew that I had something to fall back on, you know. And I think I had that going into my adult life, that feeling of, oh man, you're good at what you do, but like, you need to work, you know. There's everyone out there is working 10 times harder than you, like, you need to be doing that as well, man. So I think there was that element of like, you've already had this one huge part and huge passion of your life kind of taken away from probably not wanting it enough and not trying hard enough and not giving it everything that you probably should have done back then as a kid. Don't let it happen to this, you know, your next passion, your other passion, you know. So I think I had that sort of, I've always got it, that burning desire of not to let this one fail, you know. And it's that, I know you shouldn't be scared of failure, but, and I'm not really, but I do have that ache still of like, oh, didn't do that, didn't make it as a footballer. That was all I wanted. And now all I really want is to take pictures. So I'm going to make this one count, you know what I mean? I'm going to make this happen. And Beans on Toast was just a sidetrack, you know? Beans on Toast, yeah, whatever. Do you know what I mean? Doesn't matter, man. What do you need? Air and water. Beans on Toast is a luxury.
Mate, failure, being scared of it. It's interesting, like, what the perception of failure is, right? Because
yeah, that's leads, true.
Something not working out leads to another thing anyway. And yeah. If football works out, who's to say that was a bad thing? Who's to say it was a bad thing?
You know
thing
what? You sound exactly like Laura, my girlfriend, right? Because whenever I'm watching football and I'm like, oh, why has he done that? Why has he done that? Oh, I should have opened up there. Why has he had a touch? You know, she's like, whoa, you really know what you're on about. And I'm like, yeah, because it was 15 years of my life. And she's like, what do you think? Do you think we'd have met if you were a pro? If you had made it as a footballer? I'd be like, nah, I would be a complete dickhead. I would have been a complete knobhead, you know? If I had that much attention, that much money from an early age, I'd have probably ruined it. You know, I'd have probably been one of those stories of that you hear about certain players that had all the talent and just got in with the wrong crowd and did stupid shit. That would probably be me. So I probably wouldn't be who I am today. I wouldn't have met my girlfriend. I wouldn't be as happy and as content in my life, I don't think, if maybe that had happened. So it goes back to what you're saying about, is failure actually failure? Or is it just life and the universe and the perfect way that things ebb and flow? You know, one thing comes, another thing goes. And it happens to me now with jobs. You know, I have a really interesting job brief come through. And 5 years ago, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm shooting for so-and-so. A week later, really sorry, Max, we've gone with another photographer, or, you know, the job's been cancelled or put back. And I'm like, devastated. Now I'm like, you know what? Even if you're telling me I've got this job, I ain't even care. I don't even care about it until I'm on that set and I've got a camera in my hand, because it can be quite easily taken away from me. But when I do lose those jobs and I'm devastated, I'm like, oh, I really needed that. I really wanted that work with that brand or that musician or that footballer. Or I really needed that money just to get me through this month or whatever. Where it used to get me down, now I'm like, that's fine, man. You go. Because you might go to someone else that actually is probably going to do a better job. And 2 days later, something else comes in and I'm like, oh, I don't know why I would have even been worried about losing that job, you know? But in saying that, it sounds like I'm the most positive dude in the world. In saying that, that's not always an easy mentality and an easy way to be, you know? Because I'm like most people, like I said before, I do have times where I'm like, oh, life, the world, you know? Like, it's not easy. We live in a really, really messed up time, don't we? And everyone, like, did you see that Ange interview where he's talking about, I think he's talking about Richarlison, and he's talking about sort of, you know, come on, guys, like, be a bit more, like, you know, forgiving. This young man, like, you're right, he's not performing. All right, he's got the dream life. You know, he's getting paid 200 grand a week or whatever he's on. And all right, he plays for Brazil and Spurs. All right, he hasn't scored. But so on the surface, he's got it all. But, like, you don't know what he's going through. You don't know what's happening. You don't know where his mental health's at, where his head's at, where his relationships are at. So, like, be nicer to everyone. Be nicer to him. And I think that's the thing, and I think it's important to talk about. Like, we're talking about like successes and being doing cool shit, but there's also those times, and like you've touched upon it, where you're like, oh man, I can't do this anymore, you know, like this is really, really hard. And again, with age, it goes into like what I kind of wanted to say there was like, I learned to meditate, and I don't do it anywhere near enough. I used to do it every day, twice a day, and I don't anymore. And like my girlfriend Laura's always moaning at me to do it more. And when I do, I'm like, whew, this is easy, you know, come on, let's go. Nothing's going to bother me. And when I don't, things get to me and things come through. So I think it's that thing, you can, on the surface, you can appear to have it all. And I think unless you've been shown tools or sort of dug them out yourself and found your own sort of mechanisms in keeping creative and keeping focused and keeping happy, whether it's running, swimming, meditation, yoga, whatever, like it can be hard. So like, yeah, there are times where I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing here. This is fucked, you know. But then if I do go out for a run, or if I do meditate, or if I am like a bit more present in the day to day and looking at the birds or the sky or whatever, or watching films or reading, you're looking at photography books, you know, I'm back in the room a bit more. So you kind of have to help yourself a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's easy to get pulled out of the moment, right?
100%.
And start worrying about either the what's coming up, what might come up, what you've made up in your head,
what you've done
differently, anything but what's happening now at the end of the day. And it can start to, you've got one foot in the past, one foot in the present, in the future, sorry.
Yeah.
And you're pissing on today.
Yeah. Well, that's it. That's it. We're not actually that good at living in the moment anymore. I don't know if human beings ever have been, but it's vital, you know, it's vital to just be there and then. We can't change the past. We can't change the future, really. I don't think we can. I think you've just got to be in that moment, right? This is like a TED Talk, man. We should have a little TED Talk logo at the bottom.
Yeah, this is a 2024 spin-off coming. you mentioned tools, and like, yeah, that's a great way to put it. Like, you know, like it's learning what's at your disposal to get you through certain moments, right? And yeah, like you, I don't know when you picked that up, but I picked that up just recently, like 2021, going through a big life change.
Yeah.
And I was forced to look at my life in bits on the floor, basically, and you decide what's worth picking back up and what you want to leave down there, and you find these little coping mechanisms.
I respect that, but you know what I think, and I might be out of line in saying this, but specifically about men, right? We're not taught to emote. We're not taught to communicate, you know. We're not really taught how to be vulnerable. And I personally, myself included, I know a lot of guys that things have to get to the very rock bottom, you know, the shit's really hit the fan, whether it's a breakup, whether it's a breakdown, whether it's money, whether it's whatever. We have to let it get that far before we go, fuck, what are we going to do here? And that's when we go, oh, all right, I'm going to take control. I'm going to learn to meditate. I'm going to do yoga or whatever. What is it about men? And I actually don't think I'm wrong in saying that. You know, I know a lot of very, very strong women, my mum, my girlfriend, all the women in my life, whether it's at work or whatever, women are way stronger, way more switched on, way more emotionally tuned, and way more in charge of where they're going, I think, than men are. And I don't know if that's upbringing or the way we are in the world. But
programming.
Right? And I think that is important. I think that needs to definitely change, because even saying these things, I've got the tools. You've learned some tools in recent years, but we've had to learn them because we've been in a real pickle, right? But I still don't even use them all the time. And that's when, like I'm saying, my girlfriend gets frustrated with me. She's like, hang on a sec. When was the last time you went for a run? What are you doing standing up till two in the morning doing nothing? Like, why? When was the last time you went for a run? When was the last time you meditated? When was the last time you helped yourself? So, like, even when you do learn these tools, it's still a daily, weekly, monthly challenge to keep that good behavior and that positive thought process up.
Because the brain's always going to lean towards the negative to protect you, or because it's a familiar pattern or whatever.
The ego, man.
Yeah, I know when a stressful situation happens, this is how I react. Whether it's good for you or not, that's just what your brain will...
Most of the times it's not good for you.
Yeah, so it's like reprogramming that. And that's really hard because you're going through years and years and years of conditioning. And yeah, like, I mean, it's about creating those new thought patterns, new belief systems.
Mm.
And yeah, that's not easy, but it can change your life and it can make you feel like you can change your, I don't know how it's impacted your work, how you are with it or what.
Massively, man. And like I said, when I'm not in those processes, when I'm not doing those things that I know I should be doing, everything's affected. You know, the littlest thing will knock me off, or someone will say something, can I take it personally? Or I'll be on a shoot and my brain's going mad and I'm like, fucking hell, and I'm freaking out because I'm not doing that. But when I am, I'm like, this is easy. I'm just here having a great time, you know?
Do you catch yourself in those moments now, though, with the benefit of like this new awareness, when you're on set and you might be losing it a little bit, for want of a better expression, do you catch yourself going, no, sorry, I know this is not real, I know this is actually just, I just need to reframe this, the world's ending. I'm good at what I do.
I just think it's funny, man, like in my game, like, people can lose it quite easily, there's a lot of pressure, you know, and I do find it quite funny. Like, I've lost it a few times for sure, don't get me wrong, but I'm generally pretty, I can get a bit like, oh, frantic, but I'm generally all right. But I do laugh when other people lose it, because when you're removed from losing it, you then think, this is ridiculous. We're just taking a picture of someone here. And, all right, there's a stylist, hair and makeup, manager, agent, talent, whatever. We're in a big set or a big look. All right, this is a big deal, but like, we ain't saving lives. Do you know what I mean? There's war going on in the world, and this isn't life and death. So it actually, when you you do that zoom out thing, if you're right, zoom out to the blue sky, then zoom out to space, look down, this is insignificant, man. I hope that people don't take that the wrong way, because it seems like I don't care, but I do. I just think sometimes we're so caught up with how we look, what we're doing, how important this is. We don't even see anyone else. You know, we're so...
Yeah.
You know, it's like when you know, sometimes I remember, say you're going out on a night out and you're like, oh, I'm going to change my shirt. Oh, I've got a spot. I hope no one sees it. Oh, my hair's not right. And then you're going out thinking, oh, I hope no one's looking at me, notices my massive spot or my dodgy hair or whatever. No one's even fucking looking at you because they can't see past their own nose because they're too busy worrying about themselves, you know? It's like, I don't know, man. There's an insignificance to it all, I think.
As you've gone through this career so far, and your profile has risen, and the profile of the people that you shoot has risen, and the brands, the people and the brands, are you at the point where you just see it as, well, I know how to do my job, so this is no different?
No. I'm not, mate. I still shit myself. I still, like, going back to what I said before, I still have that, I know I'm good at what I do, and I know I can talk to people, I know I can make people feel comfortable, I know that people generally like me, and even if they don't, I can put them at ease and start to like me, and we can have a trust and a relationship there, whether it's a client, whether it's someone on set, whether it's a footballer, a musician or whatever. But I don't know, I'm still, it doesn't change for me. I'm still nervous, not nervous, but I'm still apprehensive, and I'm still like, I hope I can do a good job here. I know it's weird, it's like a catch 22, because I know I'm good, but I know that I could be better as well. I know that, and I think that's the beautiful thing about photography. I think you're never finished with photography. It's a skill, it's an art form, it's like anything. It's like being a musician, you know. I'm not comparing the two because that sounds really fucking egocentric, but, you know, Prince, for example, probably never stopped learning, right? He was a multi-instrumentalist, he could play everything and would release an album, 2-3 albums a year, whatever. I don't think he probably ever stopped learning. I'm not comparing myself to Prince at all. I'm using it as a reference, guys. But I just feel like with photography, you know, I didn't go to college, I didn't go to uni, and I had no one to teach me, so I don't still know the half of it, you know? I pick up a camera and I change some, make some numbers, do some things, and I look through the lens, and if it looks good, I roll with it. And I honestly mean that. I'm not saying that in a blasé way, but I think a lot of photographers get caught up with new gear, new kit, and, oh, that new £5,000 camera just come out, I need to have that to be as good as this person. And I fell into that trap when I was younger as well, you know. when I first started shooting, I'd message photographers on Instagram who had 10, 20, 30,000 followers. And I'd be like, what camera are you using? Thinking that if I could get their camera, I would be as good as them. And it's really not that. And I think a lot of people get hung up, especially in this world we live in, of having the latest and best, you know. Don't get me wrong, it helps.
Yeah, that's something we carry all through. Like, you can, like going back to being a teenager and wanting a specific pair of boots or whatever, because you think you'll make it that bit better. Running trainers or...
Mate, I'm the worst for it. I still do it now. I've just spent 140 quid on a pair of Hoka running trainers, and I've already got a pair, but I wanted a waterproof pair because I don't like getting my feet wet when I run. But we've been programmed to it, haven't we, in the way that we've brought up, the world we live in. But going back to photography, I do think that, you know, I see makeup artists on set with a little like 2000 Sony point and shoot taking better pictures than I'm taking, and I'm the proper photographer, and I'm like, fucking hell, that looks well cool. And it's subjective, you know?
So you work very much off of intuition when you're on a shoot then, basically, and feel, and that's creativity in its purest form, right?
I really don't know. I think it's a fine line, because I know what I'm doing, and I do spend time getting a feel for a shoot and looking at whether it's a client's mood board or when I'm at Soccer Bar, but looking at St. Pete sent me as a reference. And then I will go off and build my own version of that on, you know, Pinterest boards, or, you know, just making slides and getting that visual stimulation. And I do soak it all in, but I still get onto set, man, whether it's, you know, me and a friend, a model friend of mine, I'm just doing some pictures for their book, or whether it's, you know, like, yesterday we had Pochettino. We're shooting Pochettino. I'm like, oh god, wow, he's a serious geezer. Wow. But like, I'm still there and I'm like, I don't really know how this is gonna look until it comes out, until we look at that screen, or until I get, you know, and I'm like, oh, all right, happy with that, not happy with that, let's move, let's change this. So that's how I roll. And I think that is the way, but I think a lot of other photographers are much more organized than me and a lot more process, you know. It's a disadvantage sometimes, don't get me wrong, because it can make things a little bit more stressful. But
that stress is something that only you're aware of, though, isn't it? Because you're booked off the back of work you're producing.
Yeah. That's
so
true.
Whether you've got all these processes in place or not. So all this is just like this doesn't exist outside your head. Because people say, yeah, this guy's good.
Yeah.
We want you for this.
Yeah.
And regardless of whether you feel or think you don't know what you're doing, evidence suggests otherwise.
I appreciate that. It's, no, you're right.
It's fascinating to think that there's this whole different world
inside my head.
Everyone's looking at the same thing, but seeing a different thing, basically.
Well, I mean, that's the beauty of it, isn't it? But I don't know. Like, don't get me wrong, dude. There were moments where I look back at stuff, and I did this Real Madrid thing, and we haven't really talked about it, but I went to America with Soccer Bible Real Madrid in the summer. I think it was July, end of July, 2 weeks. And, like, I was pinching myself the whole way through, man. I got on the plane with Real Madrid. From Madrid, flew to LA, and I get on and I'm like walking through, and there's Modric and Toni Kroos and David Alaba, and I'm like, fucking hell, like, this is mad. It's mad, don't get me wrong. And I'm just sat at the back, get there, and I'm doing that job, and like, we're working closely with Soccer Bible, Adidas, and the club, and I'm documenting things there, and I. There were times where I'm like, oh my God, how am I gonna do this? There's so much going on here. One player's there doing this, another player's there doing that. Oh, we're going to training, oh, we're going to the game. And I'm thinking, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do this. This is a lot. But I look back at those shots recently, you know, and there's a lot of them, and I'm like, man, this is insane. I'm so proud of myself. But in that moment, I'm like, this is too much. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't even know if I've got the shot. And I do that on every shoot. You know, and I think anyone that tells you otherwise is probably lying.
I guess also there's that element of you'll never really know if you've got the shot until the client says, yeah, that's the shot.
Even if the client ain't happy with the shots, I'll still be happy most of the time, you know what I mean? And like, they can do one. But that's it. That's another thing I've learned, you know, getting something that I want personally from a shoot, whether it's, you know, if I'm doing a full you know, Nike shoot or Adidas shoot, and they're not fussed about getting a portrait shot because there'll be no product in it. But if I want a portrait, making sure that I have, even if it's 5-10 seconds, to go, oh, can I just get that and just get a lovely black and white portrait that I will be proud of and that I will use, you know. And when I started, I didn't really do that. I didn't have the experience or the knowledge to do that. I'd either go too far to appease the client and not be happy with what I was shooting and kind of come away with a shoot that a bit of money, but I'm not going to show anyone I'm not happy with. Or I'd really hate the client and I'd be like, I'm just going to do my own thing here, and I'd never get booked again. You know, it's like the worst business practice in the world. So I've learned that there kind of has to be, all right, the client's paying me money to be there. You know, I'm always going to tick everything. If they give me 10 requests, I'm going to give them 12 of what they've asked, and I'm going to do it, and I'll do that first. And I'll make that client happy because they're paying my bills, you know. Without that, I can't survive. But I've now learned to do exactly what they need, but then probably go on a bit more of a tangent my way. You know, it's like a dance, you know. Go that way for them, make them happy, make them trust the process, trust in the team that we've put in place on that shoot. Then maybe go a little bit left field and start being a bit playful and a bit tricky, getting some shots that they might not have asked for, they might not want, but I know that I'm quite like, and I'll probably put in my portfolio or whatever. And then if that starts to go a bit too far, then going back and going, oh, we'll go back to the clients. You know, it's just like I've really learned how to float in that space.
Well, from the hour we've been chatting, very energetic and infectious.
Probably
and
coffee I've just familiar. Had. That's good. Well, dude, you know what, though? I appreciate you saying that, and it's nice, but sometimes I think maybe I just get booked because I can talk to people and I'm not actually that good a photographer. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think people get me in because I'm a nice guy, and they're like, oh, we can book Max because he will be able to talk to that Premier League footballer like he's a mate and not be weird. You know, I think a lot of people, especially with the footballers, a lot of people get starstruck. And like, I'm still starstruck, you know, I'm still there. I'm still, oh my God. But I can talk to someone like they're my friends, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's a massive skill though, because you're connecting, I guess. And is that something that's important to you as much as the photography, like in life, I guess, if you're taking that
it
into
really
your work?
It really is. Yeah. Like I'm sometimes probably too familiar, you know, probably sometimes I overshare, freak people out, but I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, it's like we said at the beginning of the conversation, like, you could tell me anything that you want right now, and it's up to me to go, oh man, oh cool, I like that he's trusted me with that information, and or I could go, fucking hell, this guy's a bit much. It's up to me. So I think that, yeah, I think it is important to be, at the end of the day, man, we're all just normal people, aren't we? We're all, like we said before, we've all got various things going in our life. Sometimes we're successful, sometimes we're not. Sometimes we work hard, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we're up, sometimes we're down. And at the end of the day, we're people. And I think it is important. It is important to have that relationship with people, for me. Because I think without it, I've been on shoots before. I might have been out the night before. I'm like, not in a good mood. Someone's pissed me off on the tube, or I've had a missed flight or whatever, and I get to set and I'm going to fucking punch someone at the minute. Today can fuck off. And if I take that into a shoot, you know, it's not only the talent, whether it's a model, a singer or a footballer, they pick up on that if I'm in a funk, you know. It's not only that, I'm not going to get a shot. I'm not going to have a friendly face in front of me because I'm going to have been amped up. They're going to look at me like, what the fuck? It's not only that, it's everyone else on set. We're all there. We're all very lucky with what we're doing, and we're all getting paid money to be there. And it's, you know, if I'm not on my game, if I'm not low-key and chill and happy and putting on good tunes and making everyone feel good, not only are we not going to get the shot, but everyone on that set ain't going to have a good day. Creativity, it's an insular thing, but it's also a very... You know, look at Andy Warhol, Factory. Like, he had everyone there. Everyone invited, they were bouncing ideas off each other. I think in the studio, it's the same thing. Like, I've trusted a makeup artist to do their thing because they're good at what they do. I ain't going to jump in. And, you know, I've got lighting guys and assistants that I trust these guys to be like, boys, I really want it to look like this. You know, these few references, can we get in that zone and that mood? And I trust them to go and do their job. Same with creative directors, same with brands, you know, like even models. Like if you feel in a certain way, if this music's making you feel a certain way, then be that certain way and we'll get the shot. And, you know, it's art, isn't it? And I do believe in that sort of those connections and that look, that collaborative process, you know. But also it goes back to what we were saying before about letting people be free, right? If I show you trust and confidence and respect to do, if I'm here now and I'm going, mate, I don't think the sound level's very good or the microphone you're using is not very good, you're going to be there like second guessing everything. If I'm there going, mate, this is sick, you're going to feel good, we're going to both feel good, things happen, yeah, right?
Absolutely, mate. That kind of giving someone the space to do their thing is I must have mentioned this guy in like about five episodes now, but there's a guy called Alfred Adler, a Hungarian psychotherapist from back in the day, long dead. But he argues that if you give someone like true respect is allowing someone to be as they are without trying to change them. And in doing that, you give them the space to, well, be themselves, but then change in at their own pace if they want to. And that goes back to you on set. You leave the makeup artists to it because they know what they're doing. You'll get a better result out of them. The lighting guys, all that kind of thing. Maybe this career that you find yourself in now is more aligned with the kind of upbringing you got. A career in football, kind of very disciplined, you know, regimented, daily training game. And, you know, you said yourself, you probably would have gone off the rails. And that maybe hints at you kind of not really adhering to a shackled lifestyle so well. The job you've got now, or the lifestyle you live now, you travel. You know, you're shooting different clients, you're in different environments all the time, and it's a lot more, it's a lot more free for you to express yourself. So maybe that was always just meant to happen, mate. And even though it come with some heartbreak, it's led you where you were meant to go.
I'm with you, man. And I do think, even though even in my world, there are still lots of constraints. Again, you know, there's people paying money for, you know, there's lots of components from any shoot I do, where sometimes it's just me, but sometimes there's loads of people, you know, there's 3-4 assistants, there's client, there's someone from, there can be 20 people involved in that shoot, maybe more. So it does come with its constraints, but I do agree with what you're saying, man. Like, I don't really like rules. I'm at my best, man, when I'm busy, you know, when I'm doing my thing, when I've got a job, one in London and then I've got one in Spain. And I've got another shoot in America and I've got things to look forward to. And I've, you know, we all like to feel validated. You know, I know I give off that a bit, that, you know, that sort of feeling of I don't care what anyone thinks, but I do, you know, we all need to be loved. We all need to have that, you know, shown that we're doing something worthwhile. And I'm at my best when I'm feeling like I'm doing my best, you know. And going back to what we were talking about before, about mental health and things like that, when I'm not looking at my phone going, oh, I've got this job next week. Oh, man, I've got a shoot with United. Oh, my God. You know, when I don't have that, I do find it really, really hard to claw it back, you know. And I'm not afraid to admit that. I do have it. I do have moments where I'm like, what day of the week is it? Like, where am I? What am I doing? You know, it's not easy, but I think it does provide me with more hunger to keep going and to keep wanting more, you know, to keep pushing things. And I think I'm probably my own worst enemy, my own worst critic, because I am hard on myself, you know, and I do shoot sometimes and it can be one of the, you know, a big shoot and I come back and I'm like, oh, you know, like you hear stories of footballers when they've lost games and they can't hear people speaking to them for hours after and they go home and they, you know, their wife or partner knows that they're not going to be very nice for the next couple of days. I'm not saying it's the same thing, but I do come home from shoots sometimes thinking, fuck, oh, like, fucked everything, not happy. And I'll be in my own head for such a long time, you know, I'll be grumpy and I will just, like I said, I'll just sit on FIFA and play 20 games on FIFA, waste an evening or whatever. And then 2 days later on a Monday morning, I'll come back to the shoot on my laptop and I'll be like, oh, this is actually pretty good. Like, what was I doing? Why was I like that? And so, you know, there's still a lot to learn, man. There's still a lot to learn about myself. And there's still a lot to, yeah, there is. There's a huge amount for me to do still. And and I'm not going to stop. And I don't think that, and it goes back to what I was saying before about any sort of creative industry. I don't think you should ever stop. I don't think you should ever stop learning, you know, because I think the second that you do, oh man, I've been on big shoots before. I've come back and I'm like, I'm the boy. I am the best. I've made it. And that's a really dangerous spot to be in. You know, you and you hear like boxers talking about it where they've won heavyweight title five times running. And that moment where they go, I'm unbeatable. The next fight they get chinned, you know, and that's it. So it's a very fine line, you know, and I think you have to be careful of that because photography is a huge buzz for me. It's a huge, huge buzz. Huge buzz. That there's nothing like it. You when things click, you know, I can imagine it's the same as being a musician. You know, you've just written the best track ever. You know, it's a hit, right? Sometimes on set, and I'm not saying it happens all the time, but sometimes you're there and you're looking at your assistant, you're looking at the client and you're like, wow, this is sick. So it does feel, and that for me is like that natural high, you know, of like, I'm going to keep chasing that because I know I can always do a better shoot. Even those good ones that go seamlessly, I'm like, man, I've got that. I know that we can do that again. Whether it actually happens again, you know, it's a finite thing. Everyone has to be just ticking along in the right way for it to happen again. And I think that's that sort of like chasing for perfection. And I still don't think I'm anywhere near that. I don't think I've mastered that. I really don't. And I appreciate what you're saying about, you know, my body of work. And I've done some cool shit. I really have. But I still don't think I truly have my own style. You know when, and this is a sort of thing that stuck with me from very, very early on. I don't know how much, you know, how many photographers you know, like older ones, but someone like Helmut Newton, for example, you'd see a Helmut Newton picture now, and I guarantee most people would go, oh, that looks like a Helmut Newton picture. That's the level that I strive to be at. Whether I get there or not, I have no idea. But I might not get anywhere near that. But I want to get to that point where people will go, oh, wow, that's so-and-so. Not for an ego thing, just because I want to have my own style, my own fantasy world that people look at and go, wow, oh, yeah, that's so-and-so. You can just tell. And like that's where I want to get to.
If people recognize your work, it means you've left something behind of value, right?
Yeah. Because Maybe. I just want to be proud. I want to make my mum proud. I want to make my girlfriend proud. I want to make my friends proud, you know. And I want to make myself proud. And like I said, sometimes I come away from a shoot and I'm like, yeah, wow, that's good. Sometimes I come away and I'm like, fuck. And I want to minimize that side of it. I want to know that I'm always doing good. But in order to get to that level, like I think I have to be, going back to what we were talking about before, I have to be good myself. And we are only human and it's not easy, you know? So maybe I just need to meditate more.
Mate, listen, I'm going to have to wrap this up. I've got a run booked in half hour. This has been amazing.
Woo! We didn't even really talk that much, did we?
Mate, this is the football podcast. It's not about football, really. And I think we've nailed that brief today.
I mean, I'm happy to do a part two whenever. I might have to go and have some more life experiences, but yeah.
Cheers, mate. I really appreciate that. This has been, it's been really enjoyable. Really good to meet you.
Amazing. Thank you.
Nice one. Take it easy, mate.
Take care, man. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you haven't already, I'd love you to hit the follow button and forward it on to a friend. You can also find us on social media via @NPLHMag and subscribe to our weekly newsletter via nplhmag.com. See you next time. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Don't forget to hit the follow button and I'll see you next time.